Hi guys, it's Jill, and you're listening to the Equine in Theory podcast, and for this week's episode, we are going to be talking about a mare named Juno. Keep on listening. Alrighty guys, so I feel that I should let you all know that it is currently Tuesday morning. Which is the day that I post these podcasts. And last night I was laying in bed. I had full intentions of recording this episode yesterday, but I ended up in bed, and then I was like, oh, no, I forgot. So, same thing happened last week, and then all of a sudden it was Saturday, and I still hadn't recorded the episode. So, in short, I suck at schedules, but I'm doing it now, so it's fine, right? Anyway, so I was trying to think of what I should talk about and, like, if anything has been happening recently, and not too much has been going on. Over the past month, I've read 8 books, so I've pretty much just been locked away in my house reading because I live in the middle of nowhere, so there's really nothing else to do. And it's been so hot, like, unbearably hot. So, I haven't really been doing a whole lot because every time I go outside, I melt. So, also there are so many fun cat noises in the background, I greatly apologize. Nothing I can do about them because if I lock them in my room, they will terrorize it. So, we're just gonna get over that and pretend that there aren't a bunch of annoying sounds happening. But, anyway, so Juno. I feel like I should give a little bit of background here. Who is Juno? What is this mare? Is she yours? No, she's not. So, a while back, my boss found a picture of this beautiful, beautiful, beautiful gray, drafty mare. I always forget exactly what she is, but we think she's like Shire Thoroughbred, something like that. Actually, we thought that when she was much thinner, but now probably she's just full draft. But she is from a kill pen, and I know that there are varying degrees of opinions on rescuing from kill pens, and me and my boss talk about it a lot, and neither of us agree with it, but at the same time, like, you either support them and save a horse, or you let the horse get shipped off to a cow pen or a slaughterhouse, and that's not fun. None of those options are good. But my boss ended up being like, you know what? I like her. I'm gonna get her. So we did, and then brought her home and had her on quarantine for 30 days because she had some gunk in her nostrils and was rather sickly, as happens when horses are in varying degrees of health. I need to stop saying varying degrees. I apologize. So we had her in quarantine for a while, and she, like, couldn't leave the stall, which sucked, but couldn't risk infecting our other horses. But she was on lots of antibiotics and all of that good stuff, and then finally came the time to release her from quarantine, and we decided that it would be a brilliant plan to stick her out with Zoe and Rosie, it was not a good plan. Apparently, my boss, Sunny, had asked me to hold both of them, but that did not get communicated to me in a way that made sense. So, we set Juno out, and she ran around for a little while. Okay, that's not gonna work. Cell phone? Shush. So we set Juno out, and she ran around for a little while, and then Zoe came right up behind her, and Juno clearly said, do not come near me, and Zoe said, but wait, friendship, and then Juno kicked Zoe, yeah, and, like, she had 4 shoes on at the time, and, like, kicked the snot out of Zoe, and there's a whole little documentation on that on my YouTube channel, but essentially Zoe, her leg, like, got super infected and was awful. But she's recovered from that now, and a little bit more background on Juno. We actually tracked down the owner of her, her previous owner, and it was this man, and he had no idea where she'd ended up, and he was like, so relieved to hear that she ended up in a good place. But apparently, I think he gave her to his nephew to be like a cart or farm horse, something. I don't know. But the nephew ended up sending her to the Amish to get broken trained because she is four. I think she's, I don't know how long we've had her. She might be five now. I don't know. But so anyway, everything that I have heard from the Amish, not trying to knock them, but most of the horses I have met or have heard stories about that have come from the Amish are damaged. And I'm sure they're not all like that, but at least the people that worked with Juno, it is very, very, very clear that she was mistreated. My boss even had an animal communicator over the phone talk about Juno, and without any prompt was just like, this mare came from a bad place, she's been juggled around, was very scared, surrounded by a bunch of strange horses, which would allude to a kill pen, maybe. I don't know, I feel like you could fill in a lot of blanks with that one. But they said that she was just really, really mistreated. She gave like specific stories and examples, and I'm not sure how true they are, but it was interesting to hear that that's probably what happened to her. And honestly, it's not that far out there the way she acts. I mean, like, you can't just walk straight up to her. You have to do a nice big curve, and she curves you, and then she'll walk up to you after she decides you're not a threat. And I've spent some time working with her, taught her basic target training and manners and stuff like that. But like the other day, it was really funny. Well, it wasn't funny, but it was kind of scary. But the fence to her paddock got knocked down by either her or one of the other horses. But me and Sunny were driving to go give some of the back 40 horses some alfalfa pellets, and she goes, does something look wrong to you in there? And V-Style, Doc, and two of the mini ponies were in with Juno, and we were like, not fantastic. So we ended up having to get Juno, and I felt like I had like a little horse whisperer moment because nobody could catch her, but I did some body language reading and being really meticulous about mine because I just finished reading Language Signs and Calming Signals of Horses by Raquel Dreisma, maybe? The name? Pronunciation? Not great. Okay, that toy is not gonna work today, okay? No. Oh my god. No. Stop. Stomping. Quit. Cats. So noisy. Stop. Anyway, so I ended up being the one that caught her, and, you know, there's nothing greater than being like, I'm the horse whisperer, I'm the one that the horse likes. So, anyway, I've been working with her quite a bit lately, and, pretty much what I've been working on is her criteria is to just stand, don't move your feet. And then I am working on just being able to touch lots of different parts of her body. So what I've been doing is just like clicking her for standing and having her nose like pointed straight, you know, out of my space for safety. And then just like scratching on her neck a little bit, you know, I mean, I'm not standing fully facing her or anything like that, just, you know, facing forwards and reaching back with my hand to pet her so it's not a threatening position. And usually if I face her, she's like, back up. Get out of space. Head needs to be pointed at you at all times. Please do not turn towards me. And so we've done a lot of that, and just me being able to, you know, rub down her legs and her shoulder and her belly. She's not quite comfortable with me being around her hind end yet. And so we're working up in gradual successions. And you know, when we first got her, and my boss was like, well, I want to get on her and see, like, what everything's about. Trying to saddle her was a nightmare. I mean, she just was, like, running in circles around the lead rope, terrified of the saddle pad and the saddle. And this isn't a horse that's never been saddled before. But she's just so wary of what's going to happen. And she's just terrified. Ooh, good voice crack. It's early. But she's very afraid of people and their intentions and what the equipment and things that they, what they're going to do to her. And so me and Juno made a pact the other day. I was like, I'm never going to lay a hand on you, okay? I'm not ever going to be aggressive or vicious with you. It's just going to be this. I'm just petting you, and I want her to be confident in me and with equipment. And so, like, obviously, my boss is going to want to ride her in a saddle and a bridle. That requires a saddle pad and a girth. And so I'm going to shoot for the same thing I did with Mac, which when we first got Mac, putting a saddle pad on him was out of the question. And again, a horse that has seen saddle pads many times before. And I think that just goes to show that quote-unquote desensitizing in the way that you just, like, throw it on the horse and be like, look, you're not dead, is not particularly effective, because if they're just, like, forced to either suppress that fear or just get over it, then they're likely, it's going to be a long time before they're ever truly okay with it. But if you give it a positive association, like I did with Mac, like, I would just have him sniff the pad, click, and then it just be around him and click, and then gradually I would rub him with one hand and then bring the saddle pad up in my other hand over top of the one hand that was scratching him. Does that make sense? And then click and treat for that. And now we're to where I can, like, I don't even know what an adjective would be, like, crazily sling the saddle pad and throw it on his back, and he's like, okay, whatever. It brings good things. It means treats are coming. So I'm hoping to achieve the same with Juno, that, like, you know, when I touch you, good things happen. Both the touch can be nice, and also the treats are nice. And then create the same positive association with the saddle pad and a saddle and a girth, and just work up the same way I did with Mac, because she, I don't think she's ever going to be a horse that you can, like, just force things on and she'll be happy with it. I think she would be permanently scared. And even if you're being nice about it, she's just so terrified. I think that the most effective way to approach it is by using operant and classical conditioning and clicker training to create the positive associations with the equipment or the body parts that I want her to be confident about. And in turn, that also makes me a symbol of, like, good things happen. People are not bad, you know? So I want her to really blossom into an awesome horse. And it's great that she's so young, so she doesn't have too long of a history. I mean, in my opinion, she has already had too long of a history, but at least it hasn't been, like, 10 years of that. I don't know that she would have survived. She probably would have had a heart attack, because the way she acts is, like, I mean, somebody really did her wrong. I mean, you still can't touch her face. And so, I mean, we're going to be working on all of those things and getting her comfortable with people and learning to trust them again, and just realizing that nobody's out to get her anymore. You know, we're not going to hurt her, and we want to build a relationship with her and respect her boundaries. So, yeah, I think it's really interesting, because Mac has been the closest thing that I've to an abuse case that I've worked with, but Juno is much worse. I mean, she's not dangerous in the sense that she's not going to, like, rear up and bite or kick out or strike any of those things, which Mac did. So Mac was probably a little more on the dangerous, volatile side, but he was also quite ulceric, and I don't think Juno has ulcers just because she doesn't act that way, and she's never tried to bite, or she's not sensitive to the touch. She just, like, jumps because she's like, ah, are you going to hit? But then after a few repetitions, she's, like, cool with it. So I probably should go ahead and palpate her anyway, now that I'm thinking about it. See, this is why we like to talk through things out loud. But I don't know. I think that clicker training and using positive reinforcement can be especially good for horses who have been mistreated and who are really worried about you know, even being touched or being handled. I mean, she's had a halter on since she got here, because good luck getting one on. So that's going to be something else that we're working, or that we're going to work on, you know, after I get her comfortable with me touching her and all that good stuff. So it's just really interesting, because there are so many things that we really take for granted with our horses. Like when I pull Zoe out of the paddock to give her a bath and she doesn't jump when I turn on the hose and she's not afraid of being haltered. She follows me. She's not afraid of the gate making loud sounds or, you know, if another horse starts running in a paddock, she's not gonna lose her marbles. And I can throw a saddle pad on her and she'll just stand and look at me like, why are you clicking me for that? That's so basic. But with horses like, well, not so much Mac anymore, but Mac prior and Juno, it's like you can't take anything for granted. And those horses, you really have to break down every step. And you can't just assume that the horse is going to be okay with things. You have to make sure. I mean, the other day I was giving Mac a bath, and I still, when I turned on the hose, I only turned it on just a little bit because it's like, it's got a little slider. So I turned it on just a smidge and then clicked and treat, then turned it on a little bit more, click and treat, and then all the way, and then click and treat, and then turned it on nearer him, and then eventually worked up to his feet and his legs, and then we were off to the races with the bath. But I still don't want to take anything for granted and accidentally surprise him and then have him not be okay. But for Zoe, I mean, I can point the hose at her and turn it on and she doesn't so much as blink. Like, she's like, this, like, baths are fine. So I just, like, when working with especially young horses or horses that have been mistreated or abused or just are very wary of humans, I think it's really important to analyze everything that you're doing. And, like, I mean, something that seems as, you know, trivial as putting a saddle pad on can be really scary for these horses. And, I mean, you're putting something around their back that's like, no, don't do that. Gonna die. So it's really important to break steps down and not just to the rate that you feel is sufficient for the horse, but to a rate that they're not going over their fear threshold, they're not getting anxious, and that they're able to stand still at liberty. I mean, really, I feel like that is one of the biggest tests is, like, when I'm working with Mac or Juno, well, not Mac so much anymore, but, like, if something was making him uncomfortable, he was free to leave. And there was no punishment, no negative consequence for leaving. It was just, you are free to leave if this makes you uncomfortable. And that would clearly tell me, okay, it's time to take it back down a step. And the same thing happened with Juno. The other day, I was just, you know, rubbing on her shoulder, and then I turned my body to face her, and she took a step, like, quite a few steps back and, like, fully faced me and was like, what are you doing? So, I think it's really important to be aware of how the horses are responding to you. I mean, if they're flinching or sidestepping, they're trying to tell you something. And I think that it's really easy to ignore those. And even those two that I just mentioned are pretty big, I'm uncomfortable signs. Like, there's so much that happens in even just their facial expressions. I mean, everyone knows what a worried eye looks like when they've got the crinkly brow. And more agitated, anxious nostrils when it's pulled tight and you've got a lot of wrinkles around it. Or a worried nostril is more a round, bigger one. And then their ears can mean all sorts of different things. But, you know, if they go back, they're not good. And sideways ears are also, in some contexts, indicative of worry. And so it's really important to keep an eye on all of those things, and it can be tricky with a horse like Juno, who is, like, she gets intimidated or uncomfortable if you just look directly at her, like, with your body facing towards her, or even look, really, Wally? Or even if you look directly in her face. So I sort of have to, like, I normally wear a hat, so I normally have to, like, tilt my hat so I can, like, look out of the corner of my eye and see, how her facial expressions are doing, just to make sure that she's not getting too unnerved, but also I can't look at her directly. So it's just, I think it's just being aware of body language. And, you know, I think with Juno, we'll get there to where I can stand fully facing her and I can look at her and she won't be threatened by that. But at this point, she views humans strictly as predators. And so it's really important that I am keenly aware of my body language as well as hers, so that I can prevent any discomfort or fear. And, you know, if she does take a step back or if she moves away from me, then it's or if I even see her eyebrow start to crinkle, you know, any of those things, it's really important that I'm aware of that so I can take a step back and be efficient in the training. You know, I mean, if the horse is getting worried, you know, I don't want to be reinforcing worried behavior. I want to be reinforcing calm, relaxed behavior. So if I push her to the point where she's worried or too worried, you know, it's not productive training. There is a level of stress that I think is okay, but it's not a very high level, you know? So I don't want her to be afraid or fearful. You know, she can be contemplative or a little cautionary, but nothing much more than that, you know? I mean, being able to touch her right now, I don't think would ever be in a comfort zone, you know? So it's got to be just a little bit. And, you know, I'm not touching her for very long either. I just reach up slowly and touch her shoulder and maybe do one or two strokes and then click and then treat. So, and it's very important that I mark the behavior that I want. And so what I want to see more of is her standing still. So, as I'm touching her, I click and then give her a treat. And, you know, it's funny because I've seen glimpses of, like, I guess what you would call a quote unquote real horse. I had a target out the other day and we were just messing around. And, can you not with the bell, please? Please, Seffie, no, don't do that. She says, nah, do it anyway. Screw you, human. Hey, come here. Come. She says, no. Anyway, but I had the target out and she was like really up for following it. So I moved it a little faster and like did a little jog and she like did a little head toss and she came after it. She said, I'm gonna get it. And it wasn't like a attack, I'm afraid of you head toss. It was like a almost a playful one, at least I think, if I read it right. I'm biased though, so can't be for sure. But I just think it's really cool to see like little glimpses of like, oh yes, play, let's do this, from a horse that's been so shut down and so petrified for so long. And it's really cool, and I don't think there's anything more rewarding than working with a horse like that and watching them come out of their shell and be more comfortable with people, and especially when it's you know, it's kind of an awesome feeling. And you know, I harbor no ill will towards her after kicking Zoe and nearly killing her, but it's fine. but I know she was scared, and that was on us for not setting up the environment in a way that was setting her up for success. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think it's really important, again, like I said, to break things down to a level that the horse is comfortable with. I mean, we may think we've broken it down enough and then quickly realize it's not enough. And I think it's better to break down what you're asking even more rather than try and force the horse into what you think is appropriate. And I think you can do a lot more damage working with a horse that has a really low fear threshold and just forcing them into what you want than if you just take the extra little time to really set up a trusting and confident relationship where the horse knows that you're not ever going to put them in a situation where they can't handle it, and you know, that they can really trust you to be consistent, and that there's always going to be a click and a treat no matter what they ask. There's always a puzzle that they can solve, and that no consequences are going to come in the training sessions and from you. So I think that those are really important things to remember, and I've definitely seen how impactful that's been with Mac. I think the only time I've ever gotten aggressive with him, and I'm gonna admit it, and I don't like it, but when he bit me on my wrist, my instant reaction was to just, like, hit him with my other hand, and I hate that I did that, and immediately I just wanted to cry. I was like, ugh, no, I've undone everything, and it was a few weeks of going back and making sure that he wasn't afraid when my hand came up, or came up quickly, that it wasn't going to land on him, you know? So, especially with horses that have been mistreated, I mean, if you act the same way as their old people, then they're never going to trust you. So I think it's really important to, like I said, break down those behaviors and hold to a principle. I mean, in my opinion, there's no reason to punish, at least directly punish, or intentionally punish for training purposes in a training scenario. Real world scenarios sometimes are a little bit more difficult to handle, or control and prevent, you know, because sometimes you have to protect yourself. But in a training scenario, it's like there's no reason to, in my opinion, because, I mean, when you reinforce behavior that you'd like to see more of, and the horse has an increase in that behavior, then, you know, the undesired behavior is going to decrease naturally. So, you know, they would rather choose the head away manners position rather than the in your space biting position, because one offers them treats. So you don't have to punish for them being in your space. You just create the incompatible behavior. And so with horses like Juno and Mac, I'm very aware of that and try to set up scenarios where the horse is not going to be nervous, they're not going to be uncomfortable, nothing in the environment is going to set them off, and as a result, we build a confident, calm, relaxed relationship. And, you know, after you get that down after a while, then you can start adding in other factors and getting them confident and comfortable with more things going on. But it doesn't all come right away. You can't expect, like, a horse like Juno, I would never expect to get on and ride and have a happy, confident horse that I'm taking to a show next weekend, you know, like, it's not gonna happen. She needs more time than that, and she needs to be rehabbed and gain my trust. And I think the quickest way to do that is create a positive association between us and help her realize that things that, you know, I'm going to, I guess, do to her or do with her are not going to be things that are scary or that are going to hurt her. They're going to bring good things. And, I mean, obviously it can be done the traditional way where you throw a saddle pad on them and on and off and on and off until the horse is habituated to it and is no longer petrified. But I think that creates a lot of stress in the horse, and it's very hard to learn when you're at a certain level of stress. So, I would rather go about it in a way that is less stressful to the horse, because I don't want her to be stressed out by the presence of a saddle pad. I want her to look forward to it and be like, yes, put it on me. You get treats when you do that. So, yeah, I don't know. I just think it's really important to, again, be aware of where the horse is at. Break everything that you want out of the horse, you know, one goal at a time. Break it all down into the smallest possible piece, and so you can reward often. And then once you get that down, you can move up to the next step, and, you know, it can be a little more complicated, or have a little bit more touch, a little bit longer touch, or on a different body part, you know, increasing criteria one by one, and you know, just really helping the horse be comfortable and confident in people again. So I think that about wraps up this podcast, and I hope that you guys have enjoyed it. But I wanted to share Juno's story and talk a little bit about what I'm doing with her. And I'm sure she'll come up again before I move, which should be in May sometime. But yeah, I think that about concludes what I wanted to talk about. So yeah, you guys can find me on Instagram and on Facebook at, and Twitter now. I've been on Twitter more recently at Jet Equithery. That's JETEQUITHEORY. And I also have a website, jetequithery.com, with a blog post, endless resources. available horses and some other fun stuff on there. So be sure to check that out. Be sure that you are subscribed to this podcast so that you can keep up with it every week. And is there anything else? Make sure you leave a rating and review if you're interested. It helps boost the podcast and the algorithm so more people can find it and listen. So yeah, thank you guys so much for listening to this week and to listening to this week. Listen to the trees and the wind outside. Listen to the week as you march through it. Thank you for listening to this episode this week. So yeah, I hope you guys have a good one and enjoy the rest of your week. All right, goodbye.